everybody, and welcome back to the Brexit podcast. So for anyone who tuned in on Thursday and enjoyed the pseudo Donald Trump impressions, I will have to apologize, as you're not getting any more of those today. Or as the man himself might say, sad. Instead, I am still flying solo, but we're going, Jen Hahn is away, still in Berlin, but we're going to come back to the real world of Brexit and look at five developments in the past few days in our weekly roundup that should hopefully be of interest to you. And first up, the British government has published its statement of intent regarding the country's data protection laws. It's declared that the data of British citizens will be better protected with strengthened measures included in the new UK Data Protection Bill, and perhaps with the subtext of stealing a march on EU proposals that are due to come into force next year, or that might be me being slightly overly cynical. Data protection has come increasingly to the fore with the rise of social media in recent years, and the question over who should have access from everything, from our lists of friends to the holiday snaps, and whether big business should be able to sell those details on to potential advertisers. Under new government plans, individuals will have more control over their data by having the right to be forgotten, probably something that we could all use from time to time, and can also ask social media companies such as Twitter and Facebook to delete personal details. The Information Commissioner's Office will also be given more power to issue higher fines of up to 17 million, or 4% of global turnover, in the cases of the most serious data breaches. The government's digital minister, Matt Hancock, said the new data protection bill will give us one of the most robust yet dynamic set of data laws in the world. It will give people more control over their data, require more consent for its use, and prepare Britain for Brexit. We have some of the best data science in the world, and this new law will help it thrive. The proposed data protection bill wants to make it simpler to withdraw consent for the use of personal data while allowing parents and guardians to give consent for their child's data to be used. Organisations are going to need to gain explicit consent before sensitive personal data is processed, and the definition of personal data will also be expanded to include IP addresses, internet cookies and DNA. The new bill will also align the UK law with the EU's forthcoming General Data Protection Regulation, which is set to come into the force on May 25th next year. The GDPR requires anyone handling Europeans' data anywhere in the world to abide by its regulations. So this will enable British businesses to exchange and handle data easily with European partners. So it looks like in one sense we are at least ahead of the game with this part of Brexit. Britain's Information Commissioner Elizabeth Denham said, "We're pleased the government recognises the importance of data protection, its central role in increasing trust and confidence in the digital economy, and the benefits the enhanced protection will bring to the public." Dr. Adam Marshall, the Director General of the British Chambers of Commerce, said that businesses up and down the country are already preparing for the implementation of the GDPR. Bringing these measures into domestic law will give businesses more certainty about the UK's data protection regime under the Brexit during the Brexit transition, but more communication is needed to ensure that every company is aware of the changes. Firms of every sector want to be sure that their trade with suppliers, customers around Europe can continue without interruption, which means that the long-term compatibility of EU and UK data protection rules must be a priority. While consumers need assurance from business that any personal data held will not be misused, businesses too need a helping hand from the government as these changes come into effect, particularly at the smaller end of the scale. This is a complex set of changes, so firms must be helped to get them right, and no small or medium-sized business working hard to adapt to the new regime should be hauled over the coals for unintentional mistakes in the early days. We await further information when the bill is published later this year on whether the proposals meet these tests. Oh, it's a topic that's going to affect us all, but one that is increasingly difficult to manage with every company in the world scrambling for more and more of our personal data, and also making it increasingly easy for us to hand it over to them. I think be vigilant and watch this space is probably the answer for that one. Let's move on to our second point, and the Daily Express, perhaps no surprise, is warning of passport problems for Brits post-Brexit. The European Union has been developing a visa scheme similar to the ESTA for the United States, and currently Britons travelling within EU member states must only have a passport valid for the proposed duration of their stay. That's the status quo. Once the ETIAS changes are in place, travellers will have to ensure that there are at least 3 months extra on the expiry date or risk being turned away at border control. There's also a proposed clause in the ETIAS that a passport issued more than 10 years before is invalid. And with British passports having a validity of 10 years and 9 months, in theory at least, some Brits could be caught out. The European Commission said it's introducing the ETIAS visas to improve the security of the Schengen area, primarily requiring these visa-free travellers to obtain travel authorisation and undergo various security checks prior to their arrival to the EU. It's added that the ETIAS would ensure possible security threats are identified and dealt with outside of EU borders and ensure that citizens remain safe from such threats inside the EU. Under the proposed ETIAS, travellers will have to answer questions, provide details of any serious convictions, including for racism and xenophobia, and explain any previous presence in war or conflict zone. Permit is expected to cost a fiver, with UK citizens relegated to the third country nationals category of visitors to the EU. So the initial thoughts on that are that it might not be the most painful consequence of Brexit at present, but it could turn out to be if we turn up in departures on our family summer holes and then realise we've not got the right visas. Keep an eye on that one. And so it's pretty sound advice if you're travelling to any country now to make sure that you do have the correct documentation. Let's move things on and point three and see what the Lib Dem leader, Sir Vince Cable, has been up to. And he's been rattling the cages of the over 65s who he's declared are self-declared martyrs who claim leaving the EU is worth the cost. The martyrdom of the old comes cheap, said Cable, as fewer have jobs to lose and living standards are protected by triple lock on pensions. For the Brexit martyrs, paradise beckons. So to bring you up to speed on the stats, 64% of over 65s voted for Brexit, compared with 71% of under 25s who voted Remain. Cable said he was struck by the heavily Remain sentiment in colleges and schools and the heavily Brexit mood of church hall meetings packed with retired people during the referendum campaign. He claimed that austerity measures had largely affected the working population, with pensioners suffering relatively little after the financial crisis, adding that young people have added problems of prohibitive housing costs, growing job insecurity and limited career progression. The old have comprehensively shafted the young, added Sir Vince, and the old have had the last word about Brexit, imposing a worldview coloured by nostalgia for an imperial past on a younger generation much more comfortable with modern Europe. The newly elected leader has warned that describing such masochism as martyrdom was dangerous, adding, "We haven't yet heard about Brexit jihadis, but there's an undercurrent of violence in the language which is troubling." So Sir Vince is on his criticism bandwagon, also criticised cabinet ministers who he claimed were waging civil war rather than working out what they actually want from Brexit. And he said that former Work and Pension Secretary Ian Duncan Smith called for trade envoys to be sacked as a result for them talking down our country. "At this rate, we'll have Brexit thought crimes before long," said Sir Vince. and also said that with the government confirming freedom of movement until we'll end in 2019, the UK will leave the single market and there will be no transition. And on to point four, I think. So, moving on. As for the formal negotiations in Brexit, Sir Simon Fraser, who was the chief mandarin in the Foreign Office until 2015, said that the UK side had been a bit absent. Sort of a bit of a euphemism for being a bit shit, perhaps. He said, "I don't think they've begun particularly promisingly. Frankly, on the British side, we haven't put forward a lot because, as we know, there are differences within the Cabinet about the sort of Brexit that we are heading for, and until those differences are further resolved, I think it's very difficult for us to have a clear position." He called on the government to publish further details about its view on issues including the future customs arrangement and the Northern Irish border in the coming weeks. We've talked quite a bit on the Northern Irish border with Conor Devine, so check back in previous shows for the position there. "I think we need to demonstrate that we are ready to engage on the substance so that people can understand what is really at stake here and what the options are," he concluded. And let's move on to some food stuffed, or maybe some stuffed up food might be a better apt way of putting it. After the chlorinated chicken flare-up of the other week, The Independent is reporting that a post-Brexit trade deal with the US could see a massive increase in the amount of cancer-causing toxins in British milk and baby food. American regulations allow more than 20 times the quantity of harmful aflatoxins in food products compared to the stricter regime imposed by the EU, and US standards also allow products made with nuts, cereals, to have a higher level of carcinogens, which cause damage to DNA, makes cells more prone to becoming cancerous. While a direct link to liver cancer is widely accepted, the lower US standards allow American manufacturers to still produce the food more cheaply. Critics are warning that ministers pursuing a quick trade deal with Washington would be putting GDP ahead of public health if safety standards are weakened. Simon Dawson, a lecturer in food science technology at Cardiff Met University, told the publisher, "Exposure to aflatoxin can have a number of detrimental effects on the body. With babies and infants, their immune systems are not fully developed. Therefore, toxins such as these affect their bodies more so than how an adult would react. The chemicals are produced by fungi found on agricultural crops such as maize, peanuts, tree nuts, and can contaminate crops in the field at harvest and during storage. People are exposed by eating contaminated products or consuming meat or dairy foods from animals that ate contaminated feed. Studies have shown a direct link to liver cancer as the toxins damage genes which suppress the growth of deadly tumours." Mr. Dawson continued, "Aflatoxins primarily attack the liver. Large doses will lead to severe illness and death, usually through liver cirrhosis. Chronic low dosages both have an immunological and nutritional effect on the body, as they are classified as being genotoxic carcinogens. Studies have shown changes to behaviour, decreased nutrient digestion and absorption, reduced growth rate, risks of cancer, and a range of other nasty effects. In 2006, Brussels set its limits, taking into account extensive research and a best available practice to detect chemicals. It's continuously reviewed and updated. The US standard has not been updated since 1977, just a mere 40 years. Since then, there have been incidents in Africa and Asia involving intense contaminations of aflatoxins, including one in Kenya in 2004, which claimed 124 lives. A spokesman for the Department of International Trade said, "We are committed to a mutually beneficial economic arrangement with the US, but are clear that we are not going to dilute our high food safety standards or our environmental standards in pursuit of any trade deal." Ian Murray, MP, a leading figure in the campaign group Open Britain, said, The government's desperation to do a trade deal with Trump's America could put the health of British children and babies at risk. Compromising our standards to allow a higher level of carcinogens in food and milk is absolutely unacceptable. Ministers must make that clear. Way back in episode 20, we spoke to an impassioned Patty Rundell from Baby Milk Action about this issue. Patty's been campaigning for robust regulation on safety grounds for years, so it might be worth you having a listen to that one. That's episode 20. If you scroll back through on the website or the Brexit podcast page on Audio Boom or on iTunes, then you should be able to have a listen to that. I really enjoyed, remember back now, really enjoyed interviewing Patty on that subject. And finally, the Sunday Telegraph has claimed that UK negotiators are now prepared to pay up to £36 billion to the EU to settle the so-called Brexit divorce bill. A senior government figure rebutted it by telling the Press Association that no such figure has been agreed. Conservative MP Peter Bone said that it would be totally bizarre for the UK to give the EU any money, let alone £36 billion, adding that such a fee was unlikely to get through Parliament. And another Eurosceptic MP, Jacob Rees-Mogg, said there was no logic to the figure that was being reported. Liberal Democrat spokesman Tom Brake said the government's in the middle of the single biggest economic and diplomatic negotiation in our history, yet while the clock is running down, key cabinet members are still squabbling over what type of Brexit to pursue. Squabbling over what type of Brexit to pursue seems to be a running theme, unfortunately. But that is your lot for today in today's Brexit podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks to listen for this quick Brexit bulletin. We'll be back on Thursday. But until then, the Brexit podcast has been brought to you by Tim Hemming, Jennifer Hahn, and Warren Pohl, with theme music by Kevin McLeod.